You know what? There are great people out there considering joining your organization. Do they apply blindly? Probably not. Do they Google your company and read up on whatever they can find? Much more likely. Today, I'm speaking to Todd Wheatland of King Content to find out why content is essential for employer branding. Heysan, Sveysan, how's it going? You've tuned into the Link Humans podcast hosted by yours truly, Jorgen Sundberg. This podcast is where I speak to people in brands, organizations, businesses that link humans with innovation and technology. It's nearing the end of August 2016 and you knew it. We're still hosting SM London Live 2016. It's happening for the third year running. On the 9th of November in central London, we're going to be at a very cool venue called Bounce, which is the home of ping pong, so you're sure to have a ball. We'll be welcoming the top 10 social and digital speakers from the nation to fill you with tips, tricks, and takeaways. We have announced two speakers thus far, and that's from Arsenal Football Club and from The Economist newspaper. And stand by for a social network to enter the fray, the speaking fray, very imminently. Now for the important bit, do you want to come to our biggest event yet? Super early bird tickets with 30% discounts are available right now at socialmedialondon.co.uk. And this is the cheapest you can get tickets. Well, I say that if you use the promo code PODCAST, you actually get a further 10% discount. So go to socialmedialondon.co.uk, check out the super early bird tickets, use the promo code PODCAST, and you get another 10%. Hope to see you there. Plug number two, would you like to be featured on this podcast? Would you like to partner up on some content? This podcast is hosted on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and other places, also featured on Social Media Today, Undercover Recruiter, Social Media London, and other sites. Want a piece of the action? Just get in touch for a full media kit. Just email me at jorgen@linkhumans.com and let's take it from there. With that, it's time to patch in our stables meeting room and talk employer branding content. Todd Wheatland, how are you going?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Thanks for coming in to see us today. Could we start with, could you tell us about King Content and what you do there, please?
Absolutely. I'm the head of strategy at King Content, which is an agency that essentially does content strategy development, content asset development, anything from, you know, digital asset from our blogs and articles and ebooks through to feature films and documentaries for corporate clients, and as well as social media, organic and increasingly paid media amplification. So we're an end-to-end digital specialist content marketing agency.
And tell us about your journey. Where were you previously to this?
It's a very leading question. Prior to King, I was head of marketing at Kelly Services, which is in the staffing recruiting space, obviously. And I was with Kelly for many years in various roles, moving up through marketing and some operational sort of exposure. So my background's definitely, at that intersection between, let's call it marketing and HR, or marketing and talent.
Great. Okay. So leads me nicely onto my next question. How do organizations use content marketing for employer branding and or recruiting?
They don't.
Okay, next question.
So, and we were talking a little bit about this earlier. I think the, I'm a marketer. I came at this space, this gig very much from a, let's help marketers become publishers. Let's help people understand that the world's changed and they don't have to keep going out and doing, bottom of the funnel transactional promotion. They could, it's that all that beautiful, wonderful stuff that content marketing represents in terms of philosophy. What I've found, though, is that whilst that was the big opportunity, say, in the last 5-6 years, in the last 2 years in particular, we've seen a huge swing towards organizations genuinely wanting to apply these same tools and tactics towards solving their own audience challenges, whether that's talking to, broader audience challenges, so not just in the traditional marketing silo, but any part of the organization that has an audience and an objective can really take advantage of the same type of approach in building a, you know, a greater sense of community and more authenticity and transparency and all those wonderful things. So I think organizations are absolutely getting the budgets that they didn't have 2 years ago, and I see, and year on year, I see, you know, doubling, tripling, quadrupling of budgets in employer branding for many organizations. Getting much more sophisticated in the analytics and the way that they apply that, and especially for global organizations, much more localized in recognizing the connection between geography and specific role demand, and really building that connection between seeing that employee branding doesn't have to be a soft cousin of marketing brand thinking, but can actually have a very very strong ROI connection to the actual talent objectives of the organization.
So these budgets that are tripling and quadrupling and so on, does that mean a lot more content is being created and published in the space?
It does, but I think that what the shift at the same time is, as we all know, we've seen, you know, the great promise of social media, you know, 6 or 7 years ago was it was going to be free forever, and you could just shout your messages and people would click on your links and come pouring back to your website because that's what they wanted to do. We deluded ourselves into thinking. You know, the reality of those platforms is that actually was so effective that everyone did it, and we quickly killed that as a potential model. And, you know, Facebook, we've got client organizations under 1% for organic reach on Facebook now. We've seen in the last 3 months dramatic plunging in returns on organic visibility for many publishers. You know, they are media companies. So at the same, and the opposite side of that, they've become much better at actually acting like media organizations. So you'll see, you've seen LinkedIn this week introduce programmatic. You've seen, and you'll see a huge amount more product focused evolution from LinkedIn, for example, as a paid media play. It'll become much easier, and they're really trying to tap into that big agency, big corporate spend, just like Facebook has done so extremely well. I'm talking around because I actually have forgotten the question, but I think I was generally trying to answer it.
I think what you're trying to say is you got to pay to play on social, and does that mean that the answer is to create good content that will resonate with your audience?
I knew there was logic. Thank you for listening to my response. Your question talked to, are people creating more content?
Mm.
I think this the quick answer to that is, unfortunately, they are, but that is not the solution. The solution is definitely not more content. The solution is developing content with intent and understanding before you create it how you're going to get it in front of the right audience. It's much less about, gee, I've got a blog and I've got 4 social channels, so I need to produce a piece of content every day for the blog and shout it out in the social channels. It's much less about that, you know, one piece of content every day, and much more about how can I make sure every piece of content that goes out is actually trying to achieve an objective that I'm intentionally developing it for, and is actually getting a connection with the audience I'm putting in front of. So it's not just, okay, you know, shit, it's Monday, I've got to do X. It's like, this, let's get one piece out every couple of weeks, but let's make it fantastic, and let's use what savings we've made to actually pay to get in front of that audience rather than thinking they're going to somehow discover it themselves.
So quality before quantity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And how do you go about measuring the ROI? So let's say if you're you have talent acquisition targets, and how do you know if people have, you know, consumed your content before they applied, or how that's influenced their decisions?
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on. I think why marketing, you know, the whole concept of lead nurturing got so good, and that really migrated from the B2B side where there was a clear, you know, demand on marketing to generate leads, right? And the ecosystem developed and had these tools that could actually help even the most, you know, disorganized marketer understand, okay, well, there's actually a logic, or something, as flawed as the logic may be, there's a way to try to do this. I think that ecosystem hasn't existed for talent in the same way.
Mm.
You've got a lot of legacy technology sitting around. You've got a lot of startups trying to do very different things as well. So it's definitely an interesting space, and there's things happening. But you see products like Clinch, for example, that are trying to do really clever things with combining more employer branding type content assets with the actual vacancy, right? So creating this bridge between the branding activity, storytelling activity, and actual, okay, how are we going to make money out of this thing? And the analytics that those sorts of platforms are able to achieve now are really quite breathtaking compared to where it was even 6 months ago. So I think we're going to see continued evolution of how relatively easy it is to track and score and get indicators as to are these things working. And I think, you know, in general buckets, you're always trying to understand, well, who's, you know, who has seen this content in what context? Has it seemed to influence what they were doing or thinking or their willingness to share or, you know, generate some organic or some other sort of indicated interest in what you've created? And ultimately, the hardest thing, which everyone struggles with, you know, in any audience objective, people struggle with how can we actually demonstrate an ROI that it links to a business outcome for us. And that, in most cases, is sales or lead generation or job application or join a community. So it's really being really clear on what is the metric we can measure that can demonstrate as close to possible that there's a money component that's actually been delivered here.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
And, yeah, so as you mentioned, that typically that the ATSs of today, they probably couldn't really calculate that. So there's Clinch. Is another one? Is it Avature? You're pretty good at this.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with Avature. Clinch, I'm very familiar with, but Avature is not not one that's. I mean, I think you'll see. You know, it's less about. You know, it's not. Oh shit! I've got to buy another piece of tech, right? It really is. You know, the beauty of I think the beauty of content marketing and you know content-led social isn't budgets. It's understanding your audience. Everything starts from that point. You know, what typically happens is people don't really know who they're trying to talk to, or they're scared to just talk to a specific audience because they don't want to run the risk of not talking to everyone. And they also don't know themselves enough. And the bigger the company gets, there's this, you know, especially not the most massive companies because they have the resources and the focus to get it right, but that sort of second tier of still very large organizations who find it difficult to get personality and tone and clarity in what they're saying and what they actually represent. And those, if you have that, those two situations, or that situation where you really don't know exactly who you're trying to talk to and why, you just know you have to say some stuff, and you really don't know the unique tone or viewpoint that your organization can have. If you haven't invested in getting those things, then you just joined all of the vanilla content that's out there. There's so much freaking content floating around. Producing more without very clear objectives isn't the solution to that mix.
No, great. Okay, so give us a couple of examples of campaigns or initiatives that you're proud of.
Well, let me. You and I were talking a little before about Universum, so and that's of interest. Probably, you know, I know a lot of
your
Swedish friends. It's part of the Swedish mafia. You're the closet ringleader of. But I think what Universum have done really well, and this is just think about in the marketing side, they have gone from, you know, they produce all these fantastic research and insights, you know, interview over a million people a year and get these amazing sort of data points. But their legacy was they hadn't packaged that up in a way that actually worked to bring in new opportunities. So, starting with what was a really small pilot initially, they sort of took their, you know, first toe in the water around how could content marketing sort of bring that latent asset, the value of that to life and actually this is indicative of the huge challenge a lot of companies have historically is that they have copywriter type resources internally. So people who are trained to tell the world how great you are, or to try to talk about the positive things about organizations. So they're writing from the organization's perspective. Our approach and those who really get content marketing, I think, would share that is that actually that's the last thing you want to do. What you really want to do is start with a journalistic mindset, not a copywriter's mindset. And the journalists is trained to seek out these characteristics of an audience, because everything they're doing is crafted towards the engagement they want to achieve through the audience. And that's a that's a really key difference in how, if you look at where Universal was at, say, 18 months ago compared to where they are now, they everything they do now is talking to that audience, or their audiences they're trying to target with. Understanding the role of pathways of, you know, a buyer's journey from someone becoming aware of a brand, and at what point you try to capture that lead, developing different types of content assets at different parts of that journey, channeling people into certain communities or certain, you know, nurturing pathways, etc. So, you know, really applying what is by now a fairly evolved or fairly common way of looking at a framework as to how you can actually try to achieve an objective, but being really clear and investing the resources internally and externally to link the business objective to the marketing objective, and then to measure what actually happened in between. And that is, that's the goal. That's what so many people fail to do, is actually develop a, you know, document a strategy before you start.
Yeah.
And actually, and know before you start how you're going to measure success. And, it's the one thing that's so obvious, and the one thing that so many organizations struggle to do.
Yeah. And I think that's something that Joe Polizzi finds in their annual content marketer report. So it's like people... most companies don't have a written strategy for content marketing, which is so, it seems so basic, doesn't it?
And then the most basic thing, of even if people say, oh, no, we have one, if it's not documented, but a lot of people have them and still haven't really, I don't think, gone deep enough on audience. They don't really know
right
who they're trying to talk to, because those behaviors, you know, it's those little audience insights. It's that you know, salesperson who's, you know, socially dysfunctional but can, you know, be brought into a workshop or some sort of brainstorming session, and they have just this tiny little insight about, gee, you know, beer drinkers love fishing, or whatever it is that no one sort of thought of, that actually says, that's a little nugget we can use that's actually going to, you know, have a huge quantifiable impact on the way we can emotionally engage with that person and the way we tell stories. So there's, yeah, again, I'm rambling a little bit, Jorgen, but that's kind of, I'm sure there was a question I answered originally.
Yeah, so yeah, that was Universum. Can you name one or two brands beyond Universum that's perhaps not in that you haven't worked with, but that inspire you on social, yeah, digital, and content?
And so I think there's a lot of examples, and the space is very internally argumentative, I guess, about what actually is, you know, is this content or is it not, right? Mm. The fact is, everyone's coming, you know, I've got a very diverse team in my organization who are, you know, have come from, you know, video production, or come from search, or come from pure social, or, you know, there's many, many avenues that people have come into this space from. And content means very different things in those contexts. I think for me, it's the philosophy of bringing someone along in a relationship building context, rather than just sort of transact. That's the sort of the thing that I think unites people. It's the philosophy lens you can apply over this that should be carried through from your own platforms into external platforms, and that is really what's changed in the native advertising and the social layer now, as they become media plays. Is there's much more awareness of that content thread that can be pulled through. And there's still connections into traditional advertising or events or whatever it may be, but it's starting from that point of the audience understanding. The reason I am going to answer your question. the reason I talked about that is that, so Lenovo is an organization who's done a huge amount of effort in the first segment they approached was the SMB segment in Europe. And really trying to understand, well, how, what are those insights that can help us break away from just those meaningful, forward-looking, gadget-oriented technology discussions that are the sort of default wallpaper that exists for so many sort of, you know, lifestyle or business type, you know, technology meets the future sort of aspirational society sort of content. There's so much freaking content, and so many people trying to talk to, you know, in that segment, a small to medium business buyer of a certain number of employees, etc. And there's just so much noise being screened to these people. So I think Lenovo really invested in the right way around developing personas, content personas for those people. What sort of content are they really interested in? What are they already exposed to? What do they seem to be engaging most? Who are the competitors and how are they talking to those people? Not just the traditional competitors, as in people who sell products and services similar to Lenovo, but the other people who are filling their feed or trying to approach them for different things. And then determining, okay, well, based on who we are and what we're trying to achieve, where can the best white space be for us to actually do something unique with consistency, with frequency, and just be very, very focused around what we're trying to achieve and not just try to be the, you know, the lifestyle magazine that doesn't have a connection to our business outcome. Our business outcome is lead gen, lead nurturing, and closing deals. And we'll have a certain internal ecosystem around that. So really getting content, really getting marketing and sales united around a common view about what will success look like for this program, understand the audience deeply, understand themselves, and then starting with the campaigns from that point. So it's not rushing in and going, great, let's start executing. It's really laying the groundwork that then year two, now year three, the ROI can be proven in a stable and scalable sort of way, and you know, and budgets can be realigned dramatically because there's a benchmark for success. That unfortunately is still quite unusual. But I can see things that are great content, but content for the sake of content is not a business outcome. Mm. You know, getting 500,000 people viewing your video might be amazingly great from an ego satisfaction perspective, but you know, you have to, what happens when you produce your next video, right? You're going to be hoping and praying that that's you're as successful, inverted commas, as that last piece, whereas actually it may have been a complete disaster from a business outcomes perspective, right? It may have just distracted you, and actually it may have generated no net business for the organization because they weren't the right target audience. It just got picked up on Reddit and you didn't actually understand what the hell was going on in the first place. So I think a lot of the examples that I think of for content marketing are actually not those examples that people are most familiar with, and even probably the ones that I'm not always familiar with, because it's people who would really send the framework behind the scenes and executing it against a very measurable outcome they're trying to achieve.
So Lenovo, anyone else we can give a big shout out to?
Oh, you know, there's I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, I would say in McKinsey, for example,
yeah,
have always been fantastic at this. Mm-hmm.
And McKinsey Quarterly.
Yeah, I mean, and there's all, you know, people go, well, you know, of course they bloody have. They've got all this money, they've got the brand and stuff. But the fact is, it's McKinsey's always had the Quarterly, for example, right? You know, HBR's always had HBR, but not everyone's managed to translate that you know, offline success into a digital platform that actually works from a business generation perspective, right? So there's a big difference between vanity publishing and traditional thought leadership publishing, which is, gee, we have a lot of smart people, let's tell their stories, and let's blend some case studies in there, and let's, you know, have this magazine sort of thing that looks good. But the architecture behind that isn't actually intelligent and isn't informing the editorial teams as to which is the content that's leading to the most successful business outcome, then I don't think it's a successful content marketing project, even though to all intents and purposes from the outside world, it may look amazing and people get really excited about it. McKinsey actually have the machine behind the scenes that actually turn that into money, and that's why I think that's an admirable one.
Yeah, you'd expect them to know their stuff, wouldn't you? So given your experience from the recruitment world and Kelly Services, are there any recruitment or staffing brands out there that are doing it right, in your opinion?
So I must say, dear listeners, that earlier I did mention to your host that I didn't have any examples from recruiting, and that it wasn't because there probably wasn't some good stuff going on. I think it's that I just haven't been across that space in the past 2 years to the same depth. Having said that, I see a lot of vanilla type things in recruiting and staffing. Absolutely, it's not. I don't think it's been a leadership segment for this at all. And I think there's also a conflicted piece within recruiting organizations because of the cycle of what's more important, you know, sourcing or getting new business in. There's this this Jekyll and Hyde type personalities that recruiting organizations often go through.
Yeah.
I think what we've also seen is that the power of an individual sourcer or recruiter and their profile in an industry and the connection between their expertise as the go-to person, that they can actually build up independent of the recruiting organization around them, or if they're independent, is something that's been building for at least 10 years now, right? So the concept of a superstar recruiter or someone who's actually someone that can go direct to the audience and actually build that in an organic way is something I think that's been a big part of this recruiting and sourcing space in particular. But there's no one I'm looking to. Not that there aren't great examples, but I don't have them on the top of my head. No.
So what are your thoughts on, let me throw one out, Hayes. So their CEO, Alistair Cox, who's been a LinkedIn influencer for a long time. What's the value of that, you think? And also recently, the Adecco Group CEO, Alain Dehaze, I think, has joined him on LinkedIn. What's the value of that to the organization?
I don't know those examples in terms of their connection to an actual business. I don't know why they're doing that, right? I think that's what it comes down to. What role is this? Certainly, there's an addressable audience on LinkedIn. Absolutely. If you have genuine content, if it's not just badly ghost-written corporate speak around, here's us doing this thing, or here's me talking about leadership or mentoring, or there's a lot of terrible content on LinkedIn and on every platform. There's a lot of terrible content on every platform. If there's the biggest struggle, again, for especially large organizations, is authenticity with relevance to the audience, not just vanity publishing because here's my little thing and I want to talk about leadership because that'll set me up for my next job. It's got to actually say, how can I actually connect this to an awareness play for the brand, or getting people think humanizing my organization's brand. The objective of humanizing, you can't just humanize a brand by saying I posted a piece of content and you can make a comment, right? The actual tone, the nature, the topics, these things aren't just, they can't just be talking about you. You've got to be very clearly speaking to the objective you had for that and be consistent about that from month to month or whatever it is. I think a lot of these influencer posts, the ones that were in the early days really successful, had huge authenticity from people. Now I think the risk is that because more and more people are piling into it, the risk is it just becomes another part of that, okay, let's get someone to write this thing and let's whack someone else's name on it and put it up there, which can still work. But the stories need to be pulled from that person. You really need to invest in doing extremely well if you're going to have ghostwritten support for that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And a question just occurred to me. So Todd Wheatland, the brand, how do you create content and where do you distribute this and what's your ROI?
What's my ROI? I actually was savaged the other day by someone, literally this earlier this week, by someone who said they used to really like my writing, or said they do like my writing, but I'm a lazy bastard because I don't publish anything anymore. And I do have a book coming out in the next couple of months, so let's take some of the pressure off there. But I don't.
We'll link to that.
But I don't publish with consistency. I think that's been it's been a decreasing decreasing part of my what I've been up to the last 12 months in particular. So it's been a very we're on a very heavy aggressive growth path. We've got offices all over the world now. There's a lot going on. So I've been very focused on client execution and scaling the business. I think from a personal perspective, I've always been fascinated by the role of individuals. And individuals within organizations, and this line between a personal and professional brand, or where do you cross the line between what's good for you and what's good for the business? Very common challenge for a lot of people who are in this space, especially really active in social in a big organization. Huge number of people who've been shot from those organizations because they seem to have crossed some imaginary line at some point. But from me, people love to make fun of LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. I think it's definitely my most useful platform. Mm. I've actually become very a little bit obsessed with Snapchat of late.
Oh, really?
So and from a needing to explain to my son why he wasn't going to get access to it, and him saying that it wasn't fair for me to tell him that if I didn't know enough of what the platform was. So I forced myself to get into it. But I find it feels like the early days of Twitter, where it's kind of funny. People that don't really know how to do it, they're just really confused. It's unusual, and there's lots of humor and discovery and newness about it. I think it's definitely going to become a B2B play. I actually engage with a lot of my clients on Snapchat now, and I find it much like it can. If you can get client relationships going on Facebook, for example, then there's just a tone difference.
Yes.
And a level of personalization or personal emotional connection that you have with that person for some strange reason that you feel on Facebook, you wouldn't perhaps on LinkedIn. You can achieve the same thing on Twitter, though it's getting harder, it's becoming less of that sort of platform. But I think Snapchat's where that sort of activity is really happening now, that sort of personal connection, the ability to do direct messaging in a funny way with clients. I actually did it with the head of a very large organization recently where, we literally just had what would have been an email conversation previously, literally just taking stupid photos of ourselves with filters and then writing text on the actual snaps we're sending each other. So I think that's a real interesting blend of all breaking down of traditional comms channels and where you can do that. Again, haven't answered your question, but
you're trying to say is you stop blogging and now you're just doing Snapchat. Is that correct?
Oh no, I'm trying to regress. I'm trying to overcome my age and just be more like the cool kids.
Yeah. Okay, well, you've got a book coming out, so that's great. What's the name of the book?
The name of the book is The Cult of Work. And it's co-authored with Bill Borman, who many of your
listeners will be
familiar with.
Yeah.
And we're literally in final proofing stage now.
The man with the hat.
Great. The man with the hat.
Fantastic. And what if we look at this year, next year, the future, basically, what are you and your clients looking to expand or improve on in the near future? Apart from Snapchat.
Yeah, apart from Snapchat, yeah. Forget strategy, just have fun with pictures. What are we trying to improve on? I think there's an underlying complexity. We were talking before, Jorgen, about the difference between audio content and video content. There's an underlying complexity to content marketing now that didn't exist a couple of years ago. It used to be very much like, like I said before, you really can just, whack some stuff on your website, copy a link and shout about it in social channels and people will come and they'll love it, right? And they'll join a community or they'll download something or they'll give you an email address. And it was very, very simple, really. You had to really be bad at it, 6-7 years ago to not get some form of success if you knew what you were trying to do. And I still think it's possible to start from scratch and be very, very successful. But it's definitely not about producing more content. It's definitely not about just going, oh, well, shit, I like to write and I know people in the space and they sort of think like me and so I'm just going to write some stuff. I'm going to send it to, I'm going to put it out there, right? It's, our experience as consumers and it's typically through now increasingly through discovery. And that discovery may be contextual ads served up to us. It may be inline feed ads on Facebook, for example. So that's where, you're competing against people's mums and their brothers and their friends and the disaster in Turkey and the whatever. You've got these other things that are getting pushed in a contextual way directly to that person. And they're speaking to that person in an understanding way. Right, they're recognizing who that person is as an individual, and the promise of social platforms now, and certainly Facebook's ability to target down to an individual level, for example, is so much more extraordinarily sophisticated than your ability to create content for every single person on the planet. Right, so there's a line there that's it's almost like the ecosystem has outgrown your financial capability to actually use it to that extent. So you got to find a happy medium whereby you can still create purposeful, intentional content, but the unless you really have invested in knowing, and I can't emphasize this enough, obviously, because I've said it 6 or 7 times, I think, in the last 20 minutes, but if you don't spend the time really knowing the things that are going to get your audience fired up or resonating, then you're just one of the thousands of other stories that aren't quite that personal to them anymore, and you're just going to get thumbed over, even if you manage to get into someone's feed and pay for it. So it's almost like the stakes have been raised at every single level. Now, when the stakes get raised, it's like, shit, we've got to do more and more and more and more. That's absolutely when you have to do the opposite and just do a lot less. And I would advise anyone to do anything you can to declutter things, to not do 5 things, do 1 thing, to just start from a very simple premise and reduce the frequency and just focus on quality, consistency, and things that you know are going to engage, that you have a high degree of confidence going to engage with the person, and test everything. You know, it's A-B testing, it's iterative responses, it's even if you spend the time developing a strategy, you recognize that that's just a hypothesis. It's not the way the world is going to work until you actually put it into action. And even if you have a strategy and it's worked, it's not going to work the same way in 6 months' time, because these platforms we're playing in constantly changing. I don't know how many updates that Twitters and Facebooks and LinkedIns have made this year, but it's at least 1 a week from all of them that can have a significant impact on the financial viability of a certain tactic or not. Mm-hmm. And it's, I see as an agency, it's a different question, but I'll answer it. As an agency, the biggest challenge for us is we need people who are, have this incredible, sophisticated understanding of the entire digital ecosystem. And I'm a marketer, so I have to keep saying ecosystem as well. But the people who, see this landscape and all the different things you can possibly do, and shit, well, paid media now is a really big thing, and you can plug into that, and you can do this, and here's what native can be. And there's, a lot of startup activity in trying to get, how can I take my story to an audience? But at the same time, you've got to find somehow that individual, whether it's an internal person, if you have the scale, or it's an agency, or it's a 12-year-old kid who can come in as an intern, or someone who can really, really be close to that platform. Because that platform, if you're relying on it, and increasingly you are relying on them, then something that was working today and was getting you great results is suddenly going to get you, 10% of the same result in 3 months' time. Mm. And you can't just keep spending money thinking you're going to get the same outcome, because it will change and it won't be pleasant.
Yeah. Very true. Right. So final question, where can we learn more about, your work, your book and King Content, and how can our listeners connect with yourself, Todd?
Very open connector, and I'd love to hear from anyone. So on Twitter, I'm at Todd Wheatland. On LinkedIn, I am also traveling by my own name. So please, LinkedIn's probably my platform of choice, but hit me up on Twitter or anywhere all good books are sold.
Yeah, the book will be on Amazon, I'm sure.
It will.
Great. Thank you very much, Todd. I hope you got a lot out of that interview with Todd. Content is king, and Todd is king of content at King Content. Content? I hope so. Everything we talked about will be in the show notes article. So go to linkhumans.com/podcast. You'll find this article as well as previous episodes on there. And finally, make sure you subscribe to this podcast in iTunes and other places. When you do hit that subscribe button, please let me know so I can thank you personally. Many thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to catching up with you next week. Okay, so quiz time with Todd. Staffing agency or recruitment agency?
I started off as a recruitment agency guy because I was a perm recruiter. I then ended up working with Kelly Services, which that American culture of true staffing, and now I'm just confused.
Employer branding or employment branding?
Employment branding sucks. Employer branding is the way.
Resume or resume?
What the hell is that?
That's what Aussies say.
Resume?
Resume.
Aussies with lisps? I don't know. Resume.
Football or soccer?
Neither. Rugby.
Data or data?
I think I'd probably go either way on this one, but I would say data.